Hello, True Stories of Good People listeners. Now, more than ever, is the time to come together, spread kindness, and lend a helping hand to others. For this holiday season, we are introducing 5 GoFundMe causes, which bring charities, individuals, and supporters like you together around a common interest and need. From COVID-19 relief, to justice and equality, to education and more, your donation supports both urgent aid and long-term relief. You'll also receive updates from the people and charities that you've helped. You have the power to change someone's life while experiencing the joy of giving back. Visit GoFundMe.com/holiday to find your cause and get inspired. Hello, and welcome to another episode of True Stories of Good People, a GoFundMe Heroes production. I am your host, Kelsey Little. As our listeners know, in each episode of this podcast, we sit down with someone who's making a difference in the world or who's had their life changed by someone kind. And during this holiday season, we'll be focusing our episodes on 5 GoFundMe causes and the people making a difference within each of those needs. Today, you'll learn more about the Basic Necessities cause, and you'll meet Josh Santiago. Josh knew he wanted to be a barber from a young age, but what he couldn't have imagined is that he'd end up taking his skills to the streets and offering haircuts to those most in need, completely free of charge. In the last 5 years, Josh has used his talents as a barber to brighten thousands of people's lives in his Philadelphia community and beyond, and he has no plans of stopping anytime soon. Hello, True Stories of Good People listeners. I am here today in Philadelphia with Joshua Santiago. Joshua, thank you so much for being on our podcast.
No, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Okay, first things first. Philly is a very cool place to live. I always love visiting. What do you enjoy most about living here?
I think just being able to... Well, I think the way that people love each other, you know, like it's really like brotherly love here.
Yeah.
Compared to other places that I've ever been to, it's very welcoming. And I just feel like everybody is always, you know, welcoming each other, even if they're just strangers. You know, everybody love each other here.
That's so. Awesome. So the slogan lives up to its name.
Yeah, for sure.
That's really cool.
For sure.
And then just real quick Philly questions. The last time I was here, I interviewed somebody who told me that, contrary to popular belief, the roast pork sandwich is actually the Philly staple as opposed to the cheesesteak, which sounded very controversial to me. So what is your take on that?
I don't know how true that is, but cheesesteaks for sure, without a doubt. I think you could get a cheesesteak anywhere here in Philadelphia from Pat's and Gino's, which are two of the most famous places to get cheesesteaks here in Philadelphia. And you go to regular corner stores somewhere in the hood, yeah. You know, it's still good regardless of where you go, you know. So for sure, I definitely say cheesesteaks definitely live up to its name.
Nice. Know? Okay. So the debate wages on. I'm going to go with you. I don't know if you knew what he was talking about. No offense, Oscar. So before we get into the story that we're here to talk about today, I'd love to learn a little bit more about you. So I read on your campaign that family is very important to you. Your father, is that right?
Yes.
Tell us about your family.
Okay. So I have full custody of 3 of my children. You know, I probably won custody of them, probably had them now for about like 4 to 5 years. And it's been difficult. You know, it's been difficult, especially raising 3 children, because the thing here is that, you know, their mother is absent. Their mother isn't in their life. And, you know, me chasing my passion and me chasing what I actually love doing, sometimes, not that it doesn't make sense, because it does make sense, but for financial reasons, it's always, you know, I gotta worry about the kids and I gotta do this and I gotta do that. Whereas though, if she was in her life, you know, I could really chase my passion full time, you know, but it's just extremely hard. But my kids, they admire what I do. They all want to be barbers.
Wow.
You know, every time we pass someone that's homeless, Dad, are you going to give them a haircut? I was like, I can't cut everybody hair. You know, I can't cut everybody hair. But yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Something else that you talk about on your campaign, which I think is very important to the story, is what it was like growing up in your family when you were younger. Yeah. Would you be able to share some of that with us?
Yeah, it was hard. You know, I grew up in North Philadelphia, which is is the slums. It's like the slums, you know. And the thing here is that my dad, he's the one that raised me. My mom, she was absent in my life. You know, she wasn't a part of my life. She chose a drug addiction, over her being present in my life. And the thing here is that my dad, he was there, but he was really like mentally and physically abusive, you know, and he was dealing with drug addiction himself. So the thing here is that my dad, he's the one that actually got my mom like hooked on drugs. And wow. Once she got hooked on drugs, he kind of sort of just left her because he was a functional addict, you know, so he would maintain a job and stuff like that. Whereas though you got some people that just can't function when they're battling addiction, you know, but him on the other end, he was able to function, but he was very old school, you know, so he was extremely abusive and, mentally as well. And the thing here is that I lacked a lot of attention growing up, you know, so when I was going to school and stuff like that, I would act out in certain ways because I lacked the attention at the house, and I just wanted to feel loved, you know. And when I go to school, they would shook the teachers and the students, they would give me that attention because I used to act out, you know. Yeah. I used to act out, so it got really bad to the point that I got expelled from school. And wow. I got sent to a disciplinary school, got sent to boot camp as a kid. Having to feel like I had to fend for myself when I was a child, having a job at the age of like 15, 16, and only getting paid $150 every week. And it was a full-time job. Like, I was literally opening and closing, And having to give half of that to my dad. Mind you, I was only making $150, you know? Having to give half of that to my dad because he felt like, well, if you're old enough to work, then you're old enough to pay some bills. But it was never going to bills. It was going to, like, his alcohol habit as well. So it would go to, like, beer and stuff like that. But I always felt like, you know, I needed to work because that's the only way that I was able to buy my shoes. And that was the only way that I was able to buy clothes and stuff like that. Because my brother, it was me and my brother. And having, like, for me, like, my brother, he was my role model, but he wasn't a positive role model, you know. So I would see my brother come home with money all the time, or I would see my brother come home with like the flyest clothes and stuff like that, and it was just like, damn, like, I just want to be just like him. Yeah. You know. And it got to the point that when I couldn't like afford my stuff, like I had to wear my brother's stuff, you know, so we had to share clothes. So he was wearing like a size 11 at the time. I was wearing a size 8 in shoe, you know, and I would go to school with these big old shoes off my feet, like clown shoes, you know. And that's just all a part of it, you know. So I think that's why I'm very big on family now, especially with my children, because of what I've been through, you know. And I'm just glad that I'm able to set an example to my children, and, you know, and just, you know, press the issue that, you know, it's always good to family time in general is always good.
Yeah.
And that's really it.
I believe that you shared also that your mother has been homeless for pretty much your whole life.
Yes.
What has it been like you as her child to witness that?
It's difficult because the thing here is that I never had an actual relationship with my mom, and she's still alive to this day. She'll hit me up on Facebook and stuff. I was just talking to her yesterday, and sometimes it's weird, you know, because she'll tell me certain things and I'll just be like, do I really have to listen to you, you know? Because, like, my grandma and my aunt, like, they were the two that was really there for me, you know? So I think it was difficult, you know, because it's like it's very rare to come across a mother that's not in their children's lives, you know? So when I was growing up, everybody always talking about, you know, they mom this and they mom that. And all I could really talk about was my dad, you know? As a child, regardless of what I've been through with my mom, when I was a child, I used to take up for my mom all the time. Because I remember one time getting hit by a car because somebody was talking about my mom. And I crossed the street super fast. And I got hit by a damn car. And that was just me, like, actually just taking up for, you know, regardless of us not having that actual relationship. But I would still never let anyone talk bad about her, you know?
Yeah.
But I love her. You know, I definitely love her. I do. And I forgive her because we're talking about an addiction here, you know?
Yeah.
And as I got older, I got to realize how addictions are really, you know, addictions are crazy because that's not the only one in my family that battle addiction. I feel like everybody battles addiction in my family, from drugs to alcohol, you know, and I'm just grateful that I never fell. I never did it, you know, I never did it. I drunk one time in my life, never drunk after that.
Wow.
Smoked weed one time in my life, never smoked after that. And when I drunk for the first time, I threw up everywhere. I was like 18 at the time. I threw up everywhere.
That sounds right.
When I smoked one time, I literally had to go on YouTube to like learn how to smoke it. Like, I'm like, what? Like, so it was just crazy, you know. But I'm just glad, you know, that I never picked up no addiction in no way, shape, or form, you know. So,
Well, that sort of brings us to our story today and this really incredible mission that you have. So, Joshua, you are a barber, as you mentioned. First of all, how long have you been doing that?
I've been cutting hair now for 5 years.
What drew you to that in the first place?
So when I was younger, my dad, he used to cut our hair, my hair, my brother's hair. And he used to mess us up every time. Like, he used to jack us up. Like, and my brother, he had enough of it. My brother was like, listen, if he doesn't know how to cut hair, I'm going to try to cut our hair at least, you know? And my brother was better than my dad.
Nice.
And as I said, my brother was my role model, you know? So the fact that my brother wanted to be a barber, hey, I want to be a barber too, because I just want to be just like my brother, you know? And that's where it all started, you know? As a kid, I always wanted to be a barber. And
Nice. Somewhere along the way, you had this amazing idea to use your talents as a barber to offer free haircuts to people experiencing homelessness in your area and beyond now. It's such a beautiful concept, and I want to talk about like why it's so powerful, but how did you think of the idea in the first place?
So when I enrolled into barber school, September of 2014, I enrolled into barber school. And my barber instructor, his concept was, listen, everybody in this classroom doesn't have no experience. So what we're going to do is we're going to go to these shelters and we're going to provide these free services to these homeless people. But at the same time, y'all practicing. And I thought that that concept right there was just amazing, you know? So when I first went to this place called Chosen 300, which is not too far from here at all. And to this day, I still cut there monthly.
Nice.
And me being able to provide a free service to an individual that couldn't afford it meant more to me than to actually receive money for it, you know? And ever since then, I just felt like, you know, I know how important a haircut is to me. So if I'm able to make somebody day by just stopping, conversing with that individual and just popping my trunk and, hey, I got all my equipment right now. You want a haircut?
Yeah.
It brings a lot of people to tears, you know, hugs and tears, and definitely great conversation for sure, you know?
Wow. So you've turned this into a whole organization.
Yes.
It's called Empowering Cuts. But back then when you first had this idea, did you tell anyone that you were like thinking of starting this? And what did people say?
A lot of people thought that I was crazy at first, honestly, because they were just saying, how are you going to profit off of it, you know? And my concept was just always, I'm not worried about profiting off of something that I'm very passionate about, you know? I felt like when we talk about a lot of juvenile detention centers, shelters, recovery homes, elderly homes, none of these places have contracted barbers, you know? And you would think that they would contract barbers out to these places because if you're going through addiction and you're in a recovery home, you want to feel good about yourself. And something as simple as a haircut can make anyone feel good about yourself as well as a female. You know, you get your nails done, you get your hair yeah. done, you know, you feel good, you know?
It's true.
So I just feel like the power of an actual haircut is just, you know, it's out of this world, yeah. you know, for sure.
So how did you organize maybe like that very first time you went out by yourself to offer haircuts? And when was that?
I want to say right after I graduated, honestly, which was October of 2015.
Okay.
So I want to say probably 2016 is when I probably first went out on the streets to actually do free haircuts. But when I first started, I didn't even know, like, we didn't even come up with the name. We actually founded Empowering Cuts in 2017. And we would just go around and we would just, you know, partner up with different shelters and stuff like that. And that's just what it was. We'll partner up with shelters, we'll partner up with churches. And what I noticed was that a lot of organizations, they want me for free haircuts because that's what I do.
Yeah.
But it's bigger than just free haircuts to me, you know. So I don't deal with a lot of organizations that I used to deal with back then, because a lot of organizations is more like, hey, we want you for free haircuts, but do y'all really support what I'm doing? Yeah. You know, like, do y'all really support
it? It's gotta be like a partnership.
For sure, yeah. Without a doubt. You know, I feel like, hey, I'm coming here to do free haircuts. Like, are y'all, like, you know, like, my main goal, like, how can I get closer to my big goal? You know, how can I get closer to that, you know? And I felt no progress at one point in time dealing with certain organizations that weren't really supporting me in the way that I wanted to be supported, you know? And as I said, it wasn't anything to do financially, because I care less about that. But it was just more me knowing that I had organizations behind me that really loved what I stand for, you know? So,
yeah. Nice. So do you remember that very first time that you went out? Like, how many people did you interact with? Or
I cut
it was a long time ago. I know.
I cut so many hairs. I've been to so many places. I have no idea when was the first time, honestly.
Well, so, I mean, that was quite a while ago. So 2015, you kind of started doing this. Then you founded Empowering Cuts in 2017. It's still been a long time since then. So do you have like a running total of how many, first I want to know how often, and then how many total, like, have you done?
Okay. Definitely, I want to say over the years, for sure. Definitely well over 3,000 people.
Wow.
Easily.
That's
for sure, easily.
Huge.
Easily, over 3,000 people.
Oh my gosh.
And, what was the other question?
I'm sorry. Often, like, are you doing this?
Oh, so this
now?
Is like every day.
Every day?
Yeah, this is like every day.
Oh my
gosh. Yeah, this is like every day. Like, seriously.
This is really like probably your life's passion.
Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. And in my car, I carry all my equipment in my car, you know? So if I see somebody that wants a haircut, hey, is it okay if I give you a haircut? And the majority of the time, I pay people to get haircuts, which is crazy. So people are like, what? You're paying me to get a haircut? And I'm like, yeah, because a lot of individuals, they don't want haircuts because of the appearance. Mm. So if you're homeless and you're panhandling here in Philadelphia, you need to have a certain appearance so you're able to get money.
That's interesting.
Which is crazy, you
know? Never thought about that.
Yeah. So a lot of individuals, they don't want haircuts because of that, you know? So I paid them for their time, you know? Hey, can I give you $5 for, you know, a haircut, $10 for a haircut? A lot of them don't understand at first until they sit in the chair and then I'm giving them their money, you know?
Have you had anyone who at first didn't want a haircut and then after they got one was like pleasantly surprised about how they felt about it?
Yeah, for sure.
Really?
For sure. Yeah, for sure. Wow. And I think after us having conversations, because as I said, the power of a haircut is strong, but the fact that I'm stopping to talk to these individuals that people do not talk to on a daily basis and people just walk by, I think that that's the importance of it. You know, hey, how your day going, man? If you don't mind me asking, what's your name?
Yeah.
And next time I see this person, it's like, hey, Rob, how you doing?
Yeah.
Huh? And like just calling these people by their name is something special for sure. Like their facial expression is priceless when you call them by their name and you actually remember these people, you know? So
wow, that makes me so like emotional because it's true. Like I think a lot of people just by default just walk past people in this situation, and it's so dehumanizing to like not have people look at you, but also not maybe hear someone say your name like all day.
Mm-hmm.
That's really, that is a powerful thing that you're doing on top of the cuts.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I get that all the time. You know, I definitely get that all the time. A lot of individuals tell me, you know, I'll ask them what's one of the, because besides me cutting the homeless, you know, I'll go around and I interview the homeless as well, you know, and that's just asking them multiple questions. So, when we do get into conversation, they're always saying, you know, like one of the hardest parts about being homeless is a lot of like being ignored, you know, feeling ignored, you know, and a lot of people, we're talking about drug addictions that stem since they was kids, 8 years old, 9 years old. And we're not talking about no light drugs. We're talking about hard drugs that like heroin and stuff like that, you know. So it's extremely hard because for somebody to be addicted to a drug at the age of 9, like
it's horrible.
They don't know better, you know. Like at this age, they don't know better, you know. So like it's just sad, you know. It's just sad.
So maybe walk us through, you know, one of like a typical day when you go to offer the free cuts. Like, how are you feeling personally, like at the start of the day?
I think I always, when I wake up in the morning time, I always have the mindset of, regardless if I could complain, which I think we could all complain about something every single day, regardless of me complaining, I feel like as always other people out here that have it way worse than what we do. So that's the mentality that I have every single day. I have the mentality every single day. And I wake up a majority of the time, which is a habit. And I need to stop doing it because a lot of people's like, you shouldn't just roll out of bed and just get right on your phone, you know. And I do that all the time. But besides that, I think, you know, I'm feeling good. You know, I'm feeling good. Majority of the time when I'm hitting the streets, I really don't care what the weather is. You know, it depends. If I'm interviewing somebody, it could be in the rain, it could be in the snow. It really doesn't matter. But if I'm cutting someone's hair, you know, due to certain weather circumstances, I can't cut their hair, you know, if it's raining or if it's snowing.
Yeah.
But if it's really cold outside and, you know, I could offer someone a haircut, that's perfectly fine. And mind you, like my clippers heat up and you see the smoke coming out of the clippers because it's so cold outside, you know, because here in Philadelphia, it gets really cold, you know. And I just think, you know, just being able to, you know, stop somebody. If I see somebody that's panhandling, to be exact, if I see somebody that's panhandling, I'll approach that individual and I'll just tell them a little bit about what I do. I give all of them flyers all the time. And as I said, I'm just offering them, hey, like, is there any way possible that I could cut your hair and I'll pay you for your time? And a lot of them is just like, what? Like, you'll pay me for my time. And yeah, that's just what it is. Wow. You know? Yeah.
What do you do with that? When you say you interview people, what do you like do with that?
So I think that that's just more just me, you know, shedding a light on it, you know, giving them a voice. Because a lot of them love being on camera, you know, because it gives them, you know.
So you film it?
Yeah. Okay. For sure. Yeah. Nice. And definitely have them sign consents so I could post it if I wanted to post it, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what I do with it. And I'm always asking them questions, you know. My questions vary from how long have you been homeless, how was your childhood like growing up, what is your long-term goal. Trying to explain to somebody that never been through addiction, how can you explain that to them?
Wow.
So yeah, like, and it's always heartwarming because it's always like tears, and it's me and that person in tears, you know. Wow. So it's always like very emotional, especially when they're talking about something that they have never spoke about, because you give them that that comfort, you know. You give them that comfort of them feeling like they could just open up to you about whatever, regardless of a camera being in their face, you know.
Wow.
And yeah, and I pay people for their interviews as well, you know. Nice. I pay them for their interviews as well.
That's awesome.
And you know, a lot of them say, you know, it's not even about the money. Like, I really appreciate you taking time, stopping, asking me questions. And I hope that these videos actually touch someone that's actually listening, you know? So,
wow.
Yeah.
Has there been maybe like a specific conversation that comes to mind that really, really touched your heart?
Yes, for sure. Multiple, yeah, a lot. But one that gave me a whole different aspect about the homeless community. I interviewed this guy once. He told me that he was, when he was a baby, his mother gave him up for adoption because she didn't know how to be a mom. Oh. And he ended up getting adopted by this guy. And this guy, he was a single guy. He didn't have no family at all either. But he owned a candy store. So they were good financially, you know? So when he turned 18 years old, his father ended up passing away. And he left everything to him, which he didn't know what to do with any of the stuff. So he ended up losing it all. Huh. But he's homeless now. He's on the streets, dealing with a drug addiction now. And he said something that, like, literally a stay, like I remember this like it was yesterday, and it gives me the chills. He said, I could get clean if I want to get clean. That's not the problem. But the thing here is that if I get clean, I'm going to feel like I'm leaving these people behind that I consider my family, you know?
Oh,
and
gosh.
He was talking about the people that he's homeless with, you know? And that gave me a whole different aspect of, you know, people that were homeless, because the homeless community, regardless of where you go, they really stick together. Like, that's really a thing.
Yeah.
Like, their family, you know, like, they stick together for sure. Like, and yeah, like, and I saw him the other day, you know.
Really?
I see him all the time. His hair looked crazy. His hair was everywhere. It looked like, he's like, man, look like I'm growing dreadlocks. And I'm like, listen, I'll cut your hair. And at the moment, he wasn't able to you know, sit in the chair, but he told me to come back. So yeah, still a conversation with all of the homeless population here in Philadelphia. Every time they see me, hey Josh, how you doing? You know, they love me to death, and I got a lot of love for them as well, because besides me, you know, stopping to, you know, probably, you know, hey, here a dollar or two, giving them money, I always stop to converse and always check up on them to see if they need any resources for whatever reason.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah,
you're a really incredible person. Oh my gosh,
I try.
What do you think are some other, I mean, that's really, that is, that gave me the chills too, like,
yeah,
the thing about family. What are some other misconceptions you think people have about the homeless community?
I think, so I think a lot of individuals, you know, a lot of people, they're not really big on giving homeless people money, which is totally understandable, because, you know, you work hard for your money, so you don't want to give your money away. That's perfectly fine, you know? That's perfectly fine. So I think the whole judging part.
Yeah.
That's what I'm gonna say. The whole judging part. So you got a lot of individuals that's quick to judge someone that's homeless. Oh, that person choose to be out in the streets. Oh, that person choose to deal with drugs or do this, that, and third. But in all cases, that's not the case. Not too long ago, I was talking to this individual, and he was telling me, first time he ever got high was at the age of 9.
Man.
First drug that he ever did was heroin. The first person that ever got him high was his mother.
Ugh.
You know? So at that age, getting high at that age, and me looking at him, and he's 26, but he looked like he's 40 because the drugs aged him.
Yeah.
He doesn't know any better. he doesn't know any better. This dude never went to school, none of that, you know?
Wow.
And it's just sad. Situations like that is just sad because it's more mental health, the more mental health than anything, you know, more mental health than anything.
So you do this here a lot where you live in Philly.
Yeah, for sure.
But you've done it in other cities as well. And it seems like you're kind of growing it into even a bigger thing. So this past year, you put on a big event that not only included the free haircuts, but also had food, HIV testing, a live performance, like a big thing. What was the purpose of that event?
So it was actually a fundraiser. And the fundraiser was towards the goal of Empowering Cuts, which is to transform a camper into a mobile barbershop so we could travel the country and provide free haircuts for the homeless, you know?
That's so awesome.
Yeah, that's the goal. So we had a fundraiser, and after a certain time, it wasn't even really about the money. So we didn't raise that much money. We didn't raise that much money at all. But at a certain point, me being able to sit back and see that I drew all these people together and nobody knowing each other, but we're all here for the same cause, it was like mind blowing. Like, it was like, listen, y'all could put them cans down. We ain't even worried about the money right now. Like, and that event that I threw, it was a 24-hour fundraiser.
Wow.
We was cutting hair for 24 hours.
What?
On Cousinton and Allegheny, which is an extreme, like, when I mean like the one of the craziest, well, I'm going to say the craziest part in Philadelphia, like it's a crazy part in Philadelphia. And a lot of people thought that I was crazy because of where I was throwing it at. But the thing here is that that's where a majority of the homeless population is here in Philadelphia.
Okay.
So that's where I wanted to have it at, you know? And it was cool because we had barbers come from 2 hours away just to be a part of this event.
Wow.
We had stylists. We had free food through a biker's club. We had free HIV testing. We had a DJ. We had live performance from local artists. It was so much that was going on that it was just extremely beautiful, man. Like,
wow.
And mind you, I remember we did it from 12 to 12 the next day.
Oh, my gosh.
And literally, it was about to be 12 the next day, and I'm looking at everybody, and I'm like, yo, we look like something when we came out here. Now we look like crap. You know, like, we look crazy right now. But it was just amazing. Like, it was just, it was extremely beautiful. To this day, like, for sure, like, that's like one of the, one of my most proudest moments, you know, just being able to put something together like that. And we didn't have no funding for nothing. Like, all of that was like, you know, the food and all of that stuff, that was all out of pocket. Like, so we didn't have no funding for any of that. It was just organizations all coming together and us just coming up with this big plan. Like, that's just what it was. So, yeah. And as I said, a lot of people thought I was crazy. 24 hours? Y'all going to be cut hair for 24 hours? People literally came out the next morning and was like, y'all still out here?
And you're like, yeah, we said we were going to be.
Right. We still out here. So definitely amazing for sure.
Wow. So has the dream of getting a camper to renovate come to fruition yet?
Not yet.
Are you still saving for it?
For sure.
Okay.
So I had this organization a couple of days ago called Teach One Feed One, an amazing organization, and they actually gifted me a humanitarian award.
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you, I appreciate
that's
that.
So cool.
And besides that, they're also paying for the cost of turning Empowering Cuts into an official nonprofit organization.
That's so exciting. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So I'm extremely happy about that because now it opens us up to certain things, you know, to grant writings and stuff like that. Whereas though, you know, we don't gotta break our neck worrying about coming out of pocket for, you know, stuff that I do now. So like when I do take trips, I am paying for air flights, you know, gas. If it's, you know, last time I went to Chicago, I drove to Chicago on tolls was expensive, gas was expensive, hotel stay was expensive, you know. And we do this with like we do this and it's just like we're going to these cities or we're traveling to different states and we're just doing free haircuts. That's just what it is. And so we don't want nothing in return, but it's just extremely hard because if the funds were just a tad bit better than what they are now, like, yeah, it'll be easier for us to actually accomplish more, you know, for sure.
So yeah,
I'm extremely happy about us, you know, officially turning Empowering Cuts into an actual nonprofit organization, for sure, you know.
That is so exciting. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, so speaking of the funds, you launched a GoFundMe campaign a few months back, which it saw some great support, you know, but you definitely need more moving forward, especially with the camper and everything. What do those extra donations allow you to do more of?
So I think the purpose of the GoFundMe account is to, you know, bring my dream turn my dream into reality, you know, which is transform this camper into an actual mobile barbershop. So we could just pull this thing around, you know, pull it around.
I see it so clearly in my head.
Pull it around. Because the thing here is that when it is raining or if weathers are extremely bad, we're not able to do certain things that we want to do that day, you know. Yeah. So if we got something that's in the clothes that we could pull around, we don't got no excuses, you know. We still out there in the snow and the rain, you know, we out there. And we still providing these free services, you know, so yeah.
What's like your big vision for this project? Like, say in 5 years, if it went exactly the way you wanted, what would you want it to be?
So I think my mind just be everywhere. My mind is everywhere. You know, I thought about, you know, why not open up a barbershop that's ran as a nonprofit, and all we're doing is just giving free haircuts in this place. Like, that'd be dope. What, a nonprofit barbershop?
Yeah.
Like, what?
That's awesome.
Like, you know, like, and stuff like that. So it's just like, still, you know, a lot of it is still, you know, in the work. A lot of it is just, you know, still trying to paint this picture, you know. As of right now, like, the goal right now is just the camper. That's all right now, you know. That's definitely the goal. Definitely want to launch a YouTube channel pretty soon, for sure.
With
definitely
all your stories and everything. Mm-hmm. Oh my
gosh. So I definitely want to do that. Definitely want to do a YouTube channel pretty soon.
I love it.
Yeah,
you're
for
a big
sure.
thinker. Well, so as you mentioned, you've had countless thousands of conversations with people by now that you've helped, and you've learned a lot from them. So if there is one thing that you'd like our listeners to take away from our conversation today, what would that be?
I think never judge a book by its cover. And I say that because even with myself, like, a lot of people will look at me and a lot of people will see that I got a bunch of tattoos, and they're so quick to judge, you know. And when individuals get to actually know me for who I am, despite what I do in the community and stuff like that, they love me because of my heart and, you know, how genuine I am. So I want to say, when it comes to the homeless community, specifically, like, never judge a book by its cover, because you just never know what that person is going through. You don't know how that person ended up in the situation that he's in. And I feel like we're all, like, one paycheck away from being homeless, you know?
Yeah.
So definitely never judge a book by its cover, for sure.
Thank you so much to Josh for being on our podcast today. You can support his mission at gofundme.com/heroes. If you are inspired by Josh's story and you would like to change someone's life while experiencing the joy of giving back during this holiday season, be sure to visit gofundme.com/holiday to find your cause and get inspired. Thank you so much for listening to True Stories of Good People, a GoFundMe Heroes production. If you were inspired by today's story, please help us out by heading over to iTunes and leaving us a rating or review and subscribing to the show. And if anyone you know loves inspiring stories, please share our podcast with them. It means the world to us. For more inspiring stories just like the one you heard today, please visit the GoFundMe Heroes Hub at gofundme.com/heroes, and be sure to subscribe to our mailing list so you can get heartwarming stories delivered straight to your inbox. You can also follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at GoFundMe Heroes.
Also, we love to hear from listeners, so if you have any feedback, suggestions, or questions, you can write to us at podcast@gofundme.com. Special thanks to Sign Studios, where this episode was recorded pre-pandemic in Philadelphia, and to our editing team at Cloud Studios in Seattle, Washington. We'll be back next time with more true stories of good people. Talk to you then!